Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. We're wrapping up our National Recovery Month coverage with Recovery Network of Programs not only celebrating its 50th anniversary, but more than ever committed to empowering those in need to get the compassionate and personalized support they deserve to help improve their lives. We're also closing out Suicide Prevention Awareness Month with United Way of Connecticut and an individual who's lived to talk about his suicide experience. So far in 2022, nearly 112,000 Connecticut residents have reached out to United Way of Connecticut's 211 crisis team via 988, the National Suicide Hotline. And we're going to help you get support you need if you're thinking about harming yourself. And we'll close with the founder of Mikey's Way Foundation. We're going to discuss how this nonprofit's helping enrich the lives of children suffering with life-threatening illnesses. And we'll invite you to laugh it up and support the cause at the upcoming Mikey's Way Night of Comedy Showcase. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Green industry professionals across the country and Connecticut are donating a full day's work Wednesday, September 28th to honor America's military servicemen and women. Saluting Branches, Arborists United for Veterans Remembrance, a nonprofit organization, marks its seventh annual day of service with the largest volunteer effort in the tree care industry. Through united efforts, the tree care and landscape industries can show their support for our troops by helping make their final resting places a safe and beautiful environment for all who visit. Want to know more? Go to salutingbranches.org and get involved. That's salutingbranches.org. So every month, our family of radio stations here at Connoisseur Media look across the landscape of regional nonprofit agencies and initiatives, and we pick one to give a little extra radio love to. And since September is Recovery Month, one of the organizations we look toward and are honoring and celebrating this month is the Recovery Network of Programs. Not just because of the incredible work that they do and the important information that you're going to hear today on the program, but it's also their 50th anniversary, providing comprehensive care and expert recovery services to individuals or families who are on their journey to restore hope, health, and healing. Jennifer Kolakowski, their CEO, is with us this morning to help us celebrate them and maybe help you celebrate us a little bit as well. Jennifer, we are so glad to have you. But wish to heck that we could find you guys out of business with no one else left to treat.
Good morning. Yes, John, I agree. Yes, unfortunately, we're busier than we've ever been in our 50-year history.
So as we are moving toward the end of Recovery Month, and really, I mean, September marks Recovery Month, but every month is Recovery Month for the hundreds, if not thousands, of people whose lives you've touched and saved over the past half century. Let's talk just a little bit more about your organization and the importance of the continuum of services that RMP provides.
Sure. Thank you. So I think, you know, one of the things that does make Recovery Network of Programs so unique, first and foremost, I would say our incredibly dedicated and compassionate staff. But alongside our staff, we have the most comprehensive network of care in Fairfield County. And we really pride ourselves at RNP of having many doors, none of which are the wrong door, that can lead to a life of recovery. And so within our continuum of care, we have 25 distinct programs, largely in Bridgeport, but also in Fairfield County and surrounding towns.
So if folks are listening to this program outside the immediate greater Bridgeport, Fairfield County area, do you have sister programs? In other words, if they called or even showed up on your doorstep, that you might refer them to, or is basically your program open to whoever comes to you for help?
our programs, our doors are open to everybody and anybody. We are obviously in some other towns, and then where our services are unique to Bridgeport, we will make sure that individuals are connected to care, to the services that we do have. Otherwise, we're working with other organizations to make sure people receive the treatment they need.
And that partnership is so important. I mean, these days, and especially during and post, you know, the onset of COVID-19, I think so many nonprofits that have survived and sustained have done so with this collegial camaraderie and partnership, with the realization that no other nonprofit is their competition, but virtually any nonprofit that shares a philosophy like RMP's is actually a partner.
Absolutely. And again, you know, we take great pride at RMP that we do. In 50 years, we've developed very strong, professional, collaborative relationships with so many different organizations and hospitals, federally qualified health centers, universities. You know, we always are looking how to strengthen the services we provide to the individuals and families we serve by collaborating and connecting with other providers and other entities.
And part of that collaboration now, with the ongoing continuing education and the expansion of knowledge base amongst law enforcement agencies and those in them who are dealing with such a greater proportional number of individuals who may be touched by substance abuse and or like a coexisting mental health condition, your innovative collaboration with law enforcement is something we really want to spend a couple minutes talking about.
Great. Thank you. Yes. So RNP was the first in the state of Connecticut to truly, fully integrate clinical social workers into a police department. And we did that with the city of Stamford and the Stamford Police Department, who have been absolutely fantastic to work with. The program has grown. We've been in operation for a little over a year, and we started with one clinical social worker and have just added a second social worker. And we'll be adding a third within this next year. But the program itself is absolutely remarkable. And in our first year of operation and collaborating with Stamford, we've served over 800 unique individuals in providing interventions and connections to care. And that's a help and a relief to the Stamford Police Department as well as the communities. And then we are able to connect them to the services that they need.
I was going to say that's a really critical point, because the burden of just answering to, responding to, and being able to effectively address calls involving individuals that are touched by some sort of substance abuse or addiction are astronomical.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we found in Stamford, in that in this partnership, we're able to provide many of the, you know, obviously the social services and the connections to care. So the police can do what they need to do and keep, you know, public safety as their priority. It's been an incredible partnership. And we're actually now going to be working with the city of Norwalk and the Norwalk Police Department to essentially replicate this program, because it's been so impactful within the Stamford community.
Fantastic. Folks, if you want to learn more about this organization, either because you need their support or because the work they're doing touches you and you'd like to support them in some way, you can go to recovery-programs.org. We're going to give their CEO, Jennifer Kolakowski, a break at this point and visit with Daniel Levesque, who is their director of recovery services. But Jennifer, thanks for kicking things off and helping us wrap up September Recovery Month here in Connecticut and across the nation. We appreciate you and the great work that you folks are doing. And congratulations on your 50 years, your half century of providing this unparalleled service and these partnerships here in Fairfield County and beyond. So we have Daniel Levick on the line now, who is the Directory of Recovery Services for RNP. And Danielle, first, congratulations not only on the 50th anniversary of the program and in the work that you're doing, but also, I mean, when you talk about getting your hands dirty, it's not just about the recovery work you do. You actually started a memorial garden to celebrate Overdose Awareness Day and to usher in September, which is Recovery Month.
Correct. Yes. We actually unveiled it to the public this past Overdose Awareness Day a few weeks ago. And it's just a really beautiful place to honor the memory of clients that we have lost. Although we work so hard to help people get into treatment, we know how powerful, especially these new synthetic opiates are that have hit the streets. So sometimes we do lose clients, and we really wanted to provide a peaceful place for our staff and the community to really find closure and to honor just the memory of these people who unfortunately, you know, just could not beat this disease.
Yeah. And it's becoming harder and harder with the insidious invasion of fentanyl into the opioid network of illegal drugs that folks are either consciously or unknowingly being exposed to. And as I was mentioning to Jennifer before we turned on the mic, this latest scourge of this rainbow fentanyl that's geared toward children and young people, just when you think it can't get any worse, it just keeps getting worse. And you guys have been so successful across your range of programs in responding to the challenge of fentanyl. Let's talk a little bit about MATS and your work at harm reduction.
Right. Yeah. So, and the scary thing too, is that there are even stronger synthetic opioids hitting the streets every day. Mm. So our medication assisted treatment really is more crucial now than ever. So we have two clinics. We have one in Bridgeport and one in Stratford. And we utilize, you know, three different kinds of medications based on, you know, the need of the client to really combat their opioid use disorder. And we use that medication in combination with our counseling and behavioral therapies, which really has proven to be very effective and help people sustain long-term recovery. And as you had mentioned before, we are also now implementing harm reduction services. And for those who aren't familiar with harm reduction, it's a proactive approach to reduce the damage that's done by drug use and high-risk behaviors and really address, you know, these broader public health issues like HIV transmission and hepatitis and STD. So ultimately, why we wanted to implement harm reduction is because we feel it's a step in a positive direction, right? We understand that change is not easy. And really what it does is it fosters trust. So that person already knows, hey, you're not judging me and there's no stigma here. And it allows us to get comfortable with that person so that when they are finally ready for treatment, they know that they found a safe place with people who really do care about their well-being.
Well, that's fantastic. On a similar subject, which is always about getting people to their goal of recovery, we've talked a couple of times recently, including as recently as a week ago with another recovery program, of the importance of family and peer support. The individual can work with the most incredible network of professionals on the treatment end, but it's the peers and the family who really kind of make up the team. They're not on the bench. They're actually the kind of the defensive line to the quarterbacks and running backs that that your team provides, right?
Right, right. And, you know, we know that recovery in itself is about connection, right? So when we support and we truly listen to each other, that's really when solutions and goals are created. And we have seen, you know, the success rate of people who do have family interaction and understanding of their disease. So we always encourage family to be involved in that person's treatment if it's possible. And to your other point, yes, we also employ what we call recovery coaches or recovery support specialists, which I actually am myself. Mm-hmm. And these are people who, you know, have this lived experience with substance abuse and mental health. And really the goal is to help our clients achieve the sobriety, the stability, the health and the happiness that we've been able to accomplish in our own recovery. And we're ultimately their cheerleaders, and we're there to be there in any capacity that they need to connect them to resources or to really just sit, right, and have an honest conversation and to find out what their needs are and then help guide them through the entire process of recovery. So we've had a lot of success with implementing peer support because it really does make a difference when you know you're talking to someone who on some level understands exactly what you have gone through and are going through.
So in the last minute or so that we have with you, Jennifer, just let people know what they could expect if they are helping a loved one or they themselves have decided they're going to put a stick in the ground and they're going to address and tackle their addiction issues. What do they expect when they come to the Recovery Network of Programs?
So when someone finally, you know, has had enough, right, they put their hands up and they say, I can't do this anymore. The first thing to realize is that it's not going to be easy. It's going to take effort. It's going to take work. But that is why we have implemented a very large continuum of care with all levels of treatment so that we can meet you exactly where you're at, right? We like to say that there's no wrong door. So you can call one of our programs, and if that's not the place you need to be right now, we would refer you to a different program of ours so that we can meet your needs, because that's ultimately what it's about. We want to empower people in their recovery and allow them choices and options and staff who care and who are willing to, you know, do the research and really just help people in any way that we can to get their foot in the door. Because once we can get them into one of our programs, that's when they'll be able to really see that it's the change is worth it, right? That their lives are worth it, and that we are here to help them every step of the way. And some, it takes longer than others, but that's, again, that's why we're here and we have such a large continuum of care.
Well, they wouldn't have been going for 50 years and so much stronger and harder here in 2022 if they weren't successful. We invite anyone to reach the Recovery Network of Programs because they're committed to empowering folks in need to get the compassionate, personalized support they deserve to help improve their lives while creating important change throughout our community. Our guests this morning here celebrating the 50th anniversary of Recovery Network of Programs, or CEO Jennifer Kolakowski, and my guest now, Danielle Levick, our NP's Director of Recovery Services, here as we wrap up Recovery Month here in Connecticut and across the country. Danielle and Jennifer, thank you both so much. Well, as you've been hearing in our PSAs and other interviews, we're moving into the end of September, which is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. And part of the reason we called on our guests for this segment, which are Karen Buckman, who is the Director of Communications for United Way Connecticut, and Steve McCaddy, is in part due to the unbelievable statistics that were delivered a little bit earlier this month from United Way of Connecticut and their 211 mental health crisis team on just the number of calls for help that your team, Karen, has logged just this year alone for people who either were concerned about a loved one or they themselves were finding the feeling of desperation was growing so strong that they did the critically important and brave thing and reached out instead of hurting themselves.
That's correct, John. And so as John, you know, as you mentioned, there are more than to date, as of right now, more than 110,000 Connecticut residents have reached out to the United Way of Connecticut's 211 mental health crisis team, either through 988, the action line for adults, or 211 option one for youth mobile crisis.
So
and
almost 100.
They're seeking mental.
Yeah, I was saying almost 111,000, and not in all time, folks, this year, nearly 111,000. Sorry to interrupt you, Karen. I just wanted to make sure folks didn't think, well, you know, over the life of 211, what does that boil down to?
No.
This is tragic and really signals a crisis here in Connecticut.
It absolutely does. And it compares to all of 2021, where 211 Connecticut's crisis team handled 124,000 calls from adults and close to 14,000 calls from youth crisis callers in 2021. So that's about 140,000 calls. So we're on target to reach that or exceed that for 2022. But what's really surprising about and concerning about these numbers is that of the nearly 111,000 this year, nearly 12,000 of those calls were about residents under the age of 18. So it's very much affecting our youth, and we are in crisis with our youth right now.
Yeah, more than one out of 10 then. That is just horrific. And unfortunately, it's something of the drumbeat we've been hearing from support agencies, including many of whom are within the family of United Way supported agencies throughout our listening area and Connecticut and beyond. This issue with suicide, especially younger people, we know that there's also a very disturbing trend with young women, as young as middle school age and younger. So please just direct the next message that you would deliver in this conversation, Karen, to the parents of young people, middle school age and younger, who think there's no way my kid's ever going to be thinking about suicide.
Yeah, that's a great question, John. And in fact, Steve can answer it even more succinctly and give you some more examples as a person with lived experience who started his who began his suicide journey at the age of 6 or 7. So can really speak from a young person's perspective and a lived experience perspective. But we really ask that parents talk to their children, ask the tough questions, dig a little deeper, don't assume, right? And if any of you out there are struggling or need crisis and suicide prevention assistance, please call either 211 or 988 here in Connecticut. If you're wondering what the difference is between the two of them, United Way of Connecticut's 211 fields all of those calls. Both 211, 988, the action line for adults, and the youth mobile crisis line, which is 211 option one. So all of those calls get funneled through 211. So anything you might need, any services, any assistance, we can help and we can provide. We've got really empathetic, well-trained crisis contact specialists who are there, ready, willing to meet callers where they are, taking the time to understand their needs, help de-escalate the situation, stabilize the client. They're highly trained professionals and very much willing to help. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
And I think in the last couple minutes that we have with you, Karen, before we meet this fine gentleman, would be that in the initial rollout of 988 as the nationwide call and text number for suicide support, a lot of folks may have been watching more of the national regional news, which was reporting that the number rolled out, but in a number of locations across the country elsewhere, there were some challenges with getting the necessary pass through and staffing so that folks were not unnecessarily waiting any measure of time to either connect to a person to give them the help and support that they need or get that call back that they asked for. Where, you know, thankfully here in Connecticut for, such a long time, many decades, we have had 211 Info Line, which is a service of United Way of Connecticut, and that this network, in fact, was already in place, and you guys, moved early and quickly to making sure that staffing was robust to the point where they could address these nearly 111,000 calls for help just since January of this year.
That's correct, John. In fact, when 988 first rolled out that first weekend on July 16th, we saw a 50% increase in calls that first Saturday on July 16th, and then I believe a 37% increase in calls on Sunday. The great news is exactly what you shared, John, and that's and here's some more. 988 nationally is measuring and monitoring the success of all the states, and Connecticut is in a very different place and a much better position. We were preparing for years for the 988 rollout, and I can tell you that here in our state, in July, we ranked third in the nation at 95% for answer rates among states that receive at least 1,000 calls per month. Mm-hmm. So that's the most up-to-date number, 95% answer rate for states that receive at least 1,000 calls per month, number three in the nation. So we're very proud of that. And in fact, because of our success and because of how we respond, we were awarded the American Association of Suicidology awarded the United Way of Connecticut with the 2022 National Crisis Center Excellence mm-hmm. Award for Outstanding Suicide Prevention Programming.
Well, that's,
so it's remarkable, and we're very proud.
Fantastic news. And we're going to say farewell and thanks to you now. But folks, as we mentioned, if you are the parent of a young adult or a child, even as young as elementary school age, we're going to come back and talk with Steve McCaddy, and we're going to talk to you about some great resources. Karen Buckman is Director of Communications for United Way of Connecticut. Stick with us through the break, and we'll be back to talk about the subject a little bit more with Steve McCaddy. Karen, thank you so much. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, you recently heard it right here on For the People. Griffin Health has started a new long COVID-19 therapy program and help the many individuals experiencing lingering symptoms of the virus. Additionally, Griffin's behavioral health specialists are here to help relieve long COVID symptoms related to anxiety and depression. The program's offered now in Derby, Oxford, and Shelton. And if you're interested, check out Griffin Health on For the People under the podcast tab on this radio station's website. Or go to griffinhealth.org/long-long-. We're now on the line with Steve McCaddy, who is a social worker and owner of the Charter Oak Family Center up in Manchester. And as we alluded to earlier with Karen, Steve has quite a culmination of life's experience. And as we mentioned, Steve just since January, more than 1 in 10 of the nearly 111,000 people right here in Connecticut that have called for help through Connecticut's 211 mental health crisis line, or 918, the new national 988, I should say, the new national suicide assistance hotline and text system. Your situation was one that was quite unique. It started manifesting quite young in your life. So really, I'd like to devote the major bulk of the conversation to helping prevent the tragedy of a lost life to suicide of a young college age young adult, or a high school kid, middle school kid, or even, yes, sadly, elementary age child. Tell us your story.
My story starts when I was like 6 or 7 years old. Had a kind of tough environment that I was growing up in. My first urge to suicide was, again, 6 or 7 years old. I was in my room. I did what I did. Thank God it didn't work. It was a very different time, so my mother was kind of dismissive. And that it really started my long conversation that I call it with suicide, the long journey with suicide presenting itself as a possible option to me.
And flash forward here to 2022, and what a life and career you've made for yourself, and also created an organization and an opportunity to try to make sure that those who are experiencing the kind of thoughts now that you experienced back then have some means of addressing it and getting support and finding someone who's not going to dismiss them or stigmatize them.
One of the things today that is kind of amazing to me, I've spoken to, you know, several people that have experienced urges to suicide. And I think without fail, all of us have this moment where we say, and can you believe that I? And so for me, you know, it would be, and can you believe that I sing, that I am an adjunct professor, that I own this organization, that I have a voice and I'm fighting to stop suicide.
Mm. Well, tell us about Charter Oak Family Center.
Charter Oak Family Center is in Manchester. Initially, I was going to work with adults, but I have since started working with children. Most of my clients at the moment are children. I work with kids as young as 5, right up through teenage years. Oftentimes, there's some kind of event in their life that has altered their life path, and so through play therapy and through talk therapy when appropriate, we work through whatever their challenges are, try to get them in a place where they can feel hopeful about their future.
And as much as many decades have passed since your first thoughts of suicide, I have to believe, sadly, that you still are very acutely aware that the dismissal of such expressions of thought in children as young as 6, 7, 8, 9 years old are still kind of getting dismissed or downplayed, which it really is the first and perhaps biggest and most fatal mistake a parent or caregiver can make.
Yes. Anytime someone here mentions suicide, I take it very seriously. We don't dismiss it. We approach it directly. I talk to the children, talk to the parents, really kind of find out what's going on, what's the best course of action to move forward. And then we take the steps that we can to make sure that the children have, feel supported, feel cared for, feel heard, and start to work through their challenges.
And given the way predominantly young people, preteens, teens, adolescents, young adults do or may not express themselves. I guess the biggest challenge is parsing just the way teenagers act with the serious nature of some sort of suggestion or sign that they might be thinking about harming themselves.
Teenagers can be a little guarded. So we try to be careful, or I mean, pay attention to what they're saying. Oftentimes I will give the teens another avenue. So if I'm feeling like they're not connecting with me for some reason, I will offer them to call 211 or 988 as a way to connect with someone who I know is going to be in tune with them and will care for them and will listen to what they're trying to say. If they want to call 211 or 988, I may ask them to call me back when they're done, just to make sure that they're doing okay. But I like to try and use as many resources as possible to make sure that teens feel heard and feel safe to open up about whatever's going on.
Well, for your clients and contacts, you provide that critically important voice of endorsement. And in effect, today, right here, right now, you may be providing that voice of endorsement to a young person who may be listening to the program or someone who loves them. So in the last minute or so that we have with you, if you could just, revisit the resources that are available and how important and effective they are. I can't think of a better way to wrap up the program here during Suicide Awareness and Prevention Month.
So 211 and 988 are excellent numbers to call if you're having any kind of a crisis or if you're feeling urges to suicide. School social workers, your parents, a therapist if you have one, anyone should be able to listen. And if for some reason you're not feeling heard, again, I would call 211, 988. I've had my own experience on 211. And they are, they're pleasant, they are patient, and they listen. And sometimes that's just what you need, is someone to listen.
That's great. Well, I hope we've all listened very carefully to you this morning, Steve, because your message is so important. And we thank you for helping us close out our programming and our segments for National Suicide Prevention Month. We don't only talk about suicide in September, but your input, guidance, and experience is so critically important. And we thank you and Karen Buckman of United Way of Connecticut. We've been talking to Steve McCaddy, who is the owner of the Charter Oak Family Center up in Manchester here. Steve, once again, thank you for your important information this morning. Well, we can't wrap up the program without giving you a way to have a little bit of a laugh, even when it involves a cause that's dedicated to a very serious purpose. I'm talking about Mikey's Way and the Mikey's Way Foundation, which received its vision from Mikey Friedman. This organization and their dad and CEO, Les Friedman, who's with me on the line this morning, it helps connect and enrich the lives of children suffering with cancer and other life-threatening illnesses. We've had a pleasure of talking with Les before, coming up in late October, and it's awesome that you're joining me now here, Les, with a little over a month to spare, because people get busy in the fall and we want them to put October 27th into their calendar to enjoy a night of comedy to help benefit Mikey's Way and the Mikey's Way Foundation and all the efforts that you've done in memory of Michael. So tell us about this organization and a little bit about how you came together with it out of this tragedy in your family.
Sure. First, let me say thank you for having us on the program and for helping to shed light on Mikey's cause. Mikey, as you said, was my son. He passed away from a cancer called desmoplastic small round cell tumor, which is a, for short, DSRCT. But when, as he was going through treatment, he recognized, and this was, you know, 15, 16 years ago, he recognized how alone each kid is as they're going through the treatment. And as we all know, the treatments are horrible to begin with. And to be able to connect to family, friends, and school, he thought was essential. And luckily, he had the ability to do that, but there are so many out there that don't have a laptop, don't have a tablet, a way of connecting. Mm. So when Make-A-Wish came to him and asked him what he wanted, he said, "I want my own charity." And he started Mikey's Way. And we supply brand new electronics, laptops, tablets, handheld gaming systems to children that are going through chemotherapy treatment. And to date, we've gifted, we like to call it gifting, we've gifted over 10,000 laptops and computers across the country. And still going strong.
That's great. Well, neither of us, I think, are scientists, but we want to talk about a very important word this morning that means so much to the Mikey's Way cause, and that is psychoneuroimmunology. And you sort of alluded to it earlier, but let's talk a little bit more about that and the mind-body connection and why the work you're doing to provide diversions is so awesome and important, especially to young people who are in these situations where they may be going through, you know, what could be a kind of a horrific, painful, scary treatment situation.
Oh, no question, no question. There, most of us who have gone through it know very well that the day you're told your child has cancer, you enter a world you don't know anything about. It's a language that's spoken that's different from what you've ever heard before in terminology you're unfamiliar with. It's surroundings that are very scary, right? not just to the child, to the parent as well, because, you know, every parent who's been in my position knows that you don't know what's around that corner. Every single day is a different experience and a mountain that you have to climb. Mm-hmm. So the way you approach this illness mentally is almost as important as the chemotherapy that's going through your body. You need and Michael pointed this out and knew it very well. He believed very strongly in the mind-body connection, which is what psychoneuroimmunology is all about. It's really, you know, connecting the mind and the body, and you keep the mind occupied and engaged. And it has been scientifically proven that your chances of recovery, your just going through the treatment is more well received, less side effects, and quite frankly, I don't know if it's really that it's less side effects or that you are able to handle those side effects differently.
Yeah, and that actually creates a physiological benefit in terms of boosting blood counts and creating a more of an ability to relax and let the treatments do their best work.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you when we. Before the pandemic, when we were doing Mikey Way days, which is where we go to the hospital, we used to go to the hospital and push a cart around. And on the cart were electronics, and the child got to pick the electronic that was best for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now we do it through what we call the Mikey's Wish List, mm-hmm. which allows the child to pick off of a list the same electronics, but yeah. It's obviously better for everybody, especially with the pandemic. But the point is when we used to walk into that hospital room, we could see a physical change in that child. Just bringing the cart in, you go into the room, it's dark, shades are drawn, the child's in. Usually, if they're in the hospital, they're feeling awful and they're curled up like in a ball. And then they see the cart, and you tell them they get to pick. I'm going to tell you the shades go up, the lights go on, the kid's sitting up, and you have completely taken his mind to another place.
Right.
They're back to being a kid again for those 10 minutes. And I have had doctors, pediatric oncology doctors and surgeons come up to me and tell me what a difference in the child. They haven't seen him smile like that in 3 months. That happens all the time.
Well, I remember it was probably like at least 30 years ago that we started to hear these stories about how folks undergoing treatment and individuals, even with late stage cancer and other very serious diseases, the doctors were rolling in the old fashioned big chunky video machines and the big mm-hmm. TV sets, and they were making people watch these marathons of like the Three Stooges and I Love Lucy and Bugs Bunny cartoons, and they were. This is where these studies started that have culminated in this practice that you're promoting today, because they were actually finding people whose cancers were either stalled, going into remission, or the side effects of the treatments were less impactive or even in some cases disappeared just through the power of the laughter, which was kind of rooted in the sheer engagement and attachment and distraction of what they were looking at. So this work that you are doing is fantastic. In the last minute or so that we have with you before we get to meet one of the folks that everybody's going to laugh along with on October 27th. Tell us about this event you got coming up.
So once a year, we do our fundraiser, and we're holding it at this year, it's a new venue for us. It's the Sacred Heart University Community Theater down in downtown Fairfield.
Yes, the Shoe.
On the Post Road.
Yes.
Yeah, it's. I've been there, and it is gorgeous. We're going. Doors will open at 7. We have an auction thing all set up for some pretty unique and great auction items, mm-hmm. and the show will start at 8. And Chris Monty, by the way, who is the main attraction, has been doing this for us for years, and people love them.
Excellent.
They come back Sometimes I think they're not coming back to support Mikey's way. I think they're coming back just to see Chris. That's good.
Let's say if folks want more information to learn about this cause or support it in their own way or come out to the comedy show, they can go to mikeysway.org for more information. Their founder and CEO, Les Friedman, has been with us. Let's go meet one of those comedians. Let's go meet that guy that Les is talking about. We speak his name, and now he is with us. Yes, that is Chris Monty, the one who is the big draw for this Mikey's Way, a night of comedy coming up on October 27th. So, Chris, thank you for coming back and talking to us. Let us know what folks are going to be in for this show. It's a great way to kind of perk people up and make them laugh, even though they're supporting a really, really serious cause here.
Yeah, it's I can't even tell you how many years it's been now. Maybe about seven or 8 years or so. I've been working with Les and Mikey's Way. It's a great event. They have all kinds of packages that they auction off and raffle off, and people come out, and then we do a presentation. Les and the group will do a presentation telling everybody about the organization, and then we end the night with a great comedy show. And laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah, not just you, right? You're bringing a pretty funny friend along.
Yeah, Jeff Norris, who's been doing stand-up as long, if not longer than I have, a good friend of mine, another headlining comedian. He'll open up the show for about 25, 30 minutes, and then I'll come out, and I'll do like a 45-minute set after him, and it's going to be great. Jeff's been on HBO, and he headlines in Las Vegas and Atlantic City. Matter of fact, we did a couple of tours together in Las Vegas right before the pandemic hit us and killed everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've been working together for years, so it's going to be a great show. It's like family fun, family friendly, adult comedy without vulgarity or filth.
Oh, fantastic! So folks can buy tickets for the whole family, and bring their young ones and get them familiar with the cause and bring up the next generation of Mikey's Way supporters. Chris, I have to say, in the last couple minutes that we have with you, I'm a musician. I know so many musicians and comedians and folks like you and folks in your profession, when the call comes out or when you see a need, you guys are the first ones to step up and give of your services and give of your talent. And it's so greatly appreciated. And I'm sure you can speak to your entire universe of colleagues in that respect.
Yeah, absolutely. I spend probably, a good portion of my career, with benefit shows. I'm actually today, as we're speaking, I'm going later on today. There's a golf outing charity fundraiser that helps sick children. And after their dinner, I'll go on and do about 20 minutes of comedy for them. And I do money for cancer. I do fundraisers for stroke victims, for you name it, across the board, musicians and comedians, all across the country. We've always been supportive, with showing our talent and maybe the art of what we do, can bring smiles to people's faces and help raise money for good causes. So it's true. It's something that people in show business have always been charitable. Most of us anyway, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you're also,
is one that's close to my heart. Mikey's Way is, they do great things.
And deeply sensitive and philanthropic and most of all human. There have been many in your network of friends and acquaintances, I'm sure, who have had the grave misfortune of having a loved one or a child that they know suffering from the same kind of issues that Mikey's Way is trying to address. So thank you so much for your work. Folks, if you want to learn more about helping this organization or attending a night of comedy to benefit Mikey's Way on October 27th at the SHU Theater, the beautiful SHU Theater in downtown Fairfield, just go to mikeysway.org. And we want to thank once again our guests this morning, Mikey's Way founder Les Friedman and the headliner for the comedy show, Chris Monty. Chris, great to talk to you again, and thank you so much for everything you do.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.